I do want to mention that the old form and that had the magic language in it that you drafted on your own, just make sure you get that sentence in there so it works, and the new form that does not have that magic language in it, those are not interchangeable. So if you've got a contract for work that was signed before, the prime contract was signed before January 1, you got to use the old form with the magic language in it. If you're looking at a notice that comes in and somebody says, well, my lawyer sent me these new notice forms, so I'm just going to use one of those on this old contract, that's not going to work. If that contract for the original, the prime contract was signed before January 1 of this year, and you're not using the old magic language, this new form is not going to perfect your claim. So just be aware, these are not an either or. It's, you got to use this one for pre-January 1, 2022 contracts, and the new form that's in the statute for post-January 1 prime contracts. All right. Probably the murkiest area in this god-awful section, the Chapter 53 of the Texas Property Code, is the retainage notice section and the interplay between retainage and the reserve funds under Subchapter E. So you've essentially got a couple of schemes. You've got a scheme under Subchapter C where claimants read this, they know how to perfect a claim, they're supposed to do certain things, and the claim is perfected. And then you've got Subchapter E, which tells the owner, hey, if you do those things, you don't have any exposure beyond the reserve fund, formerly called retainage. The two do not exactly fit hand in glove. So first, let's try to muddle through the retainage notice provisions. We have deadlines that are calculated as no later than the earlier of, and then you get several triggers. The amendment substitutes a claimant's contract with language claimant's agreement providing for retainage. I don't know whether that's much of an improvement or not, but they thought it was important. So here's where we start with the deadlines. In the absence of a notice of termination, which is one of those subchapter E provisions under 53107, the prime in the absence of a notice of termination of the prime contract, or where the retainage amount otherwise includes a notice under 53056, the notice of retainage is due on or before the expiration of 30 days from completion, termination, or abandonment of the subcontract. Now, what's different in this revision is you can include a retainage notice in the amount for retainage in your what used to be called the fund trapping letter, the one that used to have the magic language in it under 53056, the one that there's a form for now. So you can just plug any retainage amount. If you're in the middle of a job not getting paid, and you got $100,000 that's past due, and you've got $100,000 of accrued retainage that's going to be due when you're done, you can go ahead and send that notice for the $100,000 that's due on your progress payment and go ahead and include the accrued retainage. You don't have to send another notice or a separate notice for retainage. You don't have to send a notice at the beginning of the job for retainage, as were required under some prior versions of the statute. And you don't have to send the retainage notice at the end of the job as long as that money is included in your garden variety 53056 notice of claim, which is now on the prescribed form. Clear so far? Gets worse. So if the subcontractor has gotten a notice from termination of the prime contractor from the owner, that starts a clock running on a 30-day deadline. And there's some interesting interplay between the notice that's required from the original, from the owner to subs. We'll get to that in a second. So as with the fund trapping letters, the Section 53056 notice, there's now a prescribed form. If you don't include retainage in your other notices, here's a form to do it with. Use that and you're fine. So let's talk about this notice of termination that affects whether or not a sub has a short fuse deadline on a retainage notice. There were a couple of cases a few years ago. Time flies when you're having fun. They're all more than a decade old now, but to me that was yesterday. So there was a termination event on a project, and the prime contractor was quickly replaced by the owner with a completion contractor. All the subs just kept on. They were getting paid through the new contractor, or in some cases not, but several subs that were due money under the original contractor did not get paid and filed claims, but they didn't file their lien until the project was completed. And the Supreme Court held that, no, all these completion triggers run from the contract that you had your contract under. In other words, a subcontractor with a claim arising under a terminated prime contractor, that deadline to file the lien claim starts to run from when the prime contractor was fired, not when the project was finished. So now there's an obligation on the owner to notify subcontractors when they fired the prime contractor so they won't miss these deadlines. How, you may ask, does the owner know who to send the claims to send these notices to? Well, if the owner has received a claim notice, a fund trapping letter, then they have to send that party a notice of termination.